Hey Michelle. Hi Lissa. Michelle, we missed you. I was
I
thinking a lot
missed you guys too. Yeah, no, I bittersweet, but I'm glad to see you guys
about.
again.
Was it good? Did it go well?
It was really good. I did an EFT work, like a meetup afterwards. Because I'm kind of hell bent that enough. We've been talking about the same bullshit with lawyers for far too long. I'm done.
Sounds like your time was less exciting than ours at the retreat, but very fruitful.
No, it actually was really good. It was nice to hear what people were talking about and their recommendations and stuff like that. But and I know that we like it's like, okay, people are we're spinning. We're spinning. Let's stop spinning and get meaningful help to people. So here I am. Lucky you guys. Is what I thought at the workshop, the conference.
We'll wait another minute or two for people to come in. I don't think I've ever seen Anne wearing lipstick before, so I'm trying to reorient to that. You look beautiful as always.
The whole thing. Well, also because the whole thing with anemia is that I figured out that once I finally got things color corrected, this was just one color. And it wasn't a good look. So I was like, I gotta do something. But I don't understand the color correction stuff with webcams and all of this, because this is like deep wine color. And I'm like, why are my lips orange?
They're not showing up as orange, just so you know. And this is the first time I've heard of color correction on Zoom, so.
Well, it's the settings for the webcam. I was, while we're chatting about inconsequential things, I was so frustrated. The walls in my office are this lovely kind of, Caribbean sea on a cloudy day color, and they looked slate gray in everything because I didn't realize that for all the things that Mac does well, they put super crappy cameras in their laptops. And I can't do this. I can't do this. I cannot do one more client session. I cannot do one more class or one more workshop with gray behind me, because the other problem is my hair is also blue. It was not gray. I don't mind gray. If I was coloring it silver, that would have been fine. But it takes a lot of effort to get it blue.
I hear you. Well, it looks blue and beautiful right now. Well, okay, I don't know how many people are going to be joining us live, but I want to make sure that we take advantage of all of the time that we have. So I think we should jump in. Whether you're here live or listening to the recording, welcome to our bonus three-session training on hypnotherapy and NLP techniques, specifically for advanced techniques. Yay! I am so excited about this. This has been in the making for a while. I feel like Anne and I started talking about this well over a year ago, like a year and a half ago. And so it's finally happening, everything in its right timing. And I want to just spend a few minutes by way of intro. First of all, why we're even doing this, and the reason why I stuck with it through that year and a half to get to this so that we can do this is because, as you all know, the techniques that you are learning or have learned or will learn in advance are in advanced are incredibly powerful. There's so much opportunity for co-creating transformation and long-lasting transformation with clients through it. And what I know and what I have learned through all of my years of being a practitioner is that details matter. details matter. It's less about learning more and more and more tools, although it is really fun to learn new technique, all the things for sure. But what makes us masterful and the work with our clients powerful, it always comes down to the details. And the little flourishes can make the difference between a half breakthrough and a full breakthrough, or a breakthrough that like just gathers dust on it versus a breakthrough that really takes hold. And that's why in my Virgo way, I'm always, for like getting to the details. And that being said, there's always more details, and there's details that I don't know about. And that's where Anne comes in for us. Because so much of what you are learning and have learned in advanced, in one way or another, it is about trance. And I'll let Anne, because I can't really speak to this in a smart way, I'll let Anne speak to that. But in one way or another, like, we are doing hypnosis in a back door way. And so Anne is here to give us even more details to make the trance and to make the hypnosis even more powerful and even more impactful for our clients. I'm going to read just a little bit of her formal bio. So Anne Schumann is the founder of Remove the Friction. I love that name. She works with entrepreneurs, neurodiverse individuals, and anyone who thinks and functions a bit outside the box, which I know we all do. She supports her clients in clarifying their vision, transforming obstacles, charting an aligned path forward, and reclaiming momentum for a space of vibrant purpose. Anne has also been a professional hypnotist since 1998. So she's just uber experienced. She's been an NLP practitioner since 1999. And she also is a professional hypnosis instructor. And she's been doing that for nearly 2 decades now. So she's the real deal when it comes to us learning these important flourishes and details. I know Anne very well. I've had the privilege and the pleasure of knowing her for a couple of years now. She is a graduate of Sacred Depths. She is a graduate of Advanced Depth. And as you all know, I would not bring someone to you, especially someone to you for 3 full sessions, unless I thought they were the bee's knees. And Anne really is. She knows her stuff. She is incredibly wise. She's incredibly experienced. And I am here with you with my notebook, taking notes too, because I know there's a lot that I'm going to learn. So in a moment, Anne, I'm going to turn it over to you. There's one last thing I want to say. I had shared, this is about me, with Anne earlier. Some of you may know I'm recovering from COVID. For those of you that were in retreat with me a week and a half, you saw the cough coming on. It's been a journey this last week. This is my first day back in the office, and it is I'm tired. So I am going to like take a back seat for this class. I'm gonna be here fully. At some point, I might turn my camera off, but I'm like fully present. It's just that I'm like laying on the couch fully present, but I'm still holding the space with all of you. So without further ado, Anne.
Thank you for that kind and glowing introduction. That's going to keep me warm for a while. And since Joanna mentioned taking care of herself and going off camera if she needs to, I just want to say up front that as far as I am concerned, taking care of yourself is the most important thing that you can do today. So, if that means that you are snacking, having a meal, crocheting, fidgeting, or off camera because being on camera is a background stress that distracts you. You know, whatever you need to do so that you can be as fully present and be as centered and in good relationship with yourself, just do that. We all know we've had many, 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 many months now of being on Zoom as participants, as facilitators, and we know it's always more fun to facilitate to actual live faces. And I'd rather facilitate to your hold screen if that's what lets you be here in your best way possible. To me, that's a neurodiverse accessibility issue. And it's for me as well. I love when people say, it's okay if you have to turn your camera off for a while, I won't take it personally. I won't take it personally, I promise. So we have absolutely amazing techniques available to us as practitioners from Sacred Depths, from Joanna's body of work. And she spoke truth. Much of it, the most powerful of the larger techniques, in fact, almost all of that, is done in a trance state. And when I was going through Sacred Depths and Advanced Depths, one of the things that I was noticing was that the same questions were coming up from other people in the cohort, or I was hearing things where it was like, oh, you know, if only they knew this basic little context for that, of why that works that way, it would be so much easier to remember. And so after a while, I kind of nudged Joanna and said, I think I maybe could add something here. Let's have a conversation. So as she said, it's been brewing for a while. I do have a good number of notes so that I make sure to give you everything that wants to be given today. And it is a 3-session class, so we can't do it all today. Today, I will probably do more talking and there'll be a little bit less of the interactive Q&A, having somebody, you know, maybe even practice something. We'll see how that unfolds. And then the balance will flip as we start talking about more of the actual kind of tips, tricks, techniques. But today, I want to establish the foundational context for what gives us these tools in the first place. Does that make sense? Am I talking too fast? That's the other concern I have. I have a tendency to talk really fast when I get excited. And I'm very excited to be here. So if I do start to run away, somebody just flag me. I also probably won't monitor the chat a whole lot. And there will be places built in for Q&A. But if you're just like, whoa, I'm lost. Just wave, unmute yourself, something. Because I'm also today getting used to a 2-screen setup, so that I can see you all and also be able to pull up documents if I need them. And wow, that is a steeper learning curve than I thought it was going to be. So bear with me. These amazing techniques that we have, we know that any technique is only as impactful as the skill with which it's applied. So we can amplify or mute the efficacy of these techniques from Sacred Depths, depending on the skill that we are able to bring to them. So my goal is to help you amplify that and notice the places where we might be inadvertently muting the power. So the fields of hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming give us valuable context about the skill sets and how to leverage the rules of language and the intersection of language with various states of consciousness. Human beings, we now know that there are other animals that have, that communicate in more complex ways than we once thought. But as far as the complexity of spoken language and knowing a species has the ability to create an abstraction in language, as far as I know, so far humans are it for that. So we are meaning making machines. Our words shape our experience internally. Our words shape how people experience us externally. And our words change how we are or are not able to get our needs met. And so one of the things that we'll look at as we go along is how to think differently about language when we're doing these techniques. Now, you absolutely do not have to train as a hypnotist or an NLP practitioner in order to learn and use these skills. These are skills. This is a toolbox. I am here to give you, in essence, the quick and dirty intro to things that would be helpful. And I want you to know there's no one right way to do things. There are more or less helpful ways to do things, ways that make your job easier or harder, and therefore may have impact on your client's experience and results. So when I put this together, I wanted to give sacred depths and advanced depth practitioners the opportunity to learn things that would help you to hone your guided trance work skills for more efficient and effective inner work with your clients. Guiding clients through their inner world is a key skill in sacred depths, right? Without that, it wouldn't be sacred depths. It would just be another question-based coaching modality. And that's not wrong. It's just not what we're here for. We're here for the good, juicy, deep stuff, right? At least I am. I hope you are too, because you're here. So applying basic understandings from the foundational context of hypnosis and NLP gives us access to greater confidence, greater efficacy, greater efficiency in working with trance, and also an easier time knowing how to navigate our clients' inner world and maybe even navigating our own. So one of the things as we go through, we talk about the four levels of learning in sacred depths. And I want to make sure that we're attending to that as we're going through. But first, I want to tell you, where did it go? Yeah. I'll come back to it. The page went missing. I know you got in the email what the bullet points were of the three classes. So today, what we're going to be covering is a functional model of the mind and also kind of a gross overview of what hypnosis and NLP are and why they're relevant in some more specific ways. Next time, we're going to really dig into, I called it the rule book for trance. I don't think it's going to be really that sexy, but also attending to how and why words matter when we're working in trance states. And then in our third class, it's about integration. It's about putting the skills together with the tools and the techniques, and also looking at integration techniques in trance. We have choices about how we guide our clients through the integration process and whether we do that while they're still in trance or after they're emerged into ordinary consciousness. So we'll look a little bit about how and why you would make those choices. So if at any point you're thinking, wait, I really have a question about this thing and I know it's in the next class, but I'm not going to be able to focus unless I ask it, just ask it. We have the space. We're not so large a group that we can't have a little bit of flexibility. Fair enough? Yes, agreed. All right, good. I do like handouts. Well, let me rephrase that. I love it when people give me handouts. I love having something that tells me where we're starting, what we're going through, and where we're ending up, so that I can sink into the information instead of wondering what's happening next. That said, making handouts is the bane of my existence. So I decided to kind of compromise on the handout situation. So as far as handouts go, what I've created for you is kind of an open outline with the headings of the things that we're going to be talking about today. It should end up being more or less in the order that we're going to cover things. And it's a Google document, so you'll be able to save a copy of that document either to your own Google Drive, or if you want to download in some editable file format, then you can fill in your own notes there. Or you're welcome to take notes on pen and paper, or not take notes at all. It's all good, whatever you like. So before I forget that that's a thing I wanted to do, let me make sure that I get you the link for the Google document. I need to give you, I gave you a whole page bio about me at the end of it because editing might not be my forte either. Let me get this. And just in case you are someone who sometimes is challenged with Google Drive, I tried to put instructions for how to pull that down. Why don't I go ahead and just briefly screen share this so that you can see. Ah, Joanna, you will have to enable screen sharing for me at some point.
You're co-host now, you should be able to screen share.
Oh, okay. Well, let's try that again. Where did my screen go? There it is. Hello. Where did it go? There it is. Too many things. Yeah. So this is your notes document that you have available. It's not editable for you when you first click on it, which is why you have to copy it to make sure that I could edit as we go. So the other reason I did it this way was so if we decide that there's another topic that we actually need to put in there, that we can do that. We can fix it. And then as we get towards the end of our 3 weeks, my intention is to have handouts for you that have more of the information filled in. But I think you're going to be fine. So, everybody okay with the Google Doc? Anybody struggling? Okay. Just want to make sure that I actually can see everyone. Okay, good. All right. So, let's see. I don't have to introduce myself because Joanna did that. Cool. Talked about that. Awesome. Yes. In the realm of taking care of yourself, before we get into the information, I want to acknowledge that we are coming into year 3 of a collective global trauma, otherwise referred to as the pandemic. Nothing is normal, and many of us are not okay. So if at any point something comes up for you, even if it doesn't make sense and you need to go take care of yourself, or you have a question because you're saying, why did this come up now? This is curious. Let me know if that's something that you want to look at, work on, maybe not work on, but kind of unpack a little bit in the context of what we're learning. And again, if you need to just bail, take a moment, it's fine. Please take care of yourself. So, to the end of taking care of ourselves, I'd like us to take our attention inward for a few moments. I'm going to do this by focusing on breathing if that's comfortable for you. I know that for some people, focused breathing is not. If that's the case, do whatever you would typically do when somebody says, hey, let's breathe together. Totally fine. So let's take a few moments now to focus inward, to begin to calm our minds, our bodies, our nervous systems. Taking nice deep breaths in, if that's comfortable for you. And then letting nice relaxed breaths just float out. And if it's comfortable for you to close your eyes, feel free to do that. Or finding a neutral space to look. And as you continue to turn your focus inward, a little bit more, moment by moment, breath by breath. Let your mind and your body know that you will take care of them today while we're here together. And as you breathe in, feeling the oxygen distributing through your body, sending love and care to all of your cells. And as you continue breathing and focusing, allowing yourself to connect with or set an intention that you now fully trust that you will receive exactly what you need from these classes, from today's class. That you will receive 100% of what you are meant to receive, even if your attention is not 100% present. And take a moment to find that place within yourself. It may be a mental space, an imaginary space, or it may be a physical spot in your body that you can feel and connect with, where your inner wisdom tells you your confidence and your centeredness connect. The place in you that can give rise to that deep knowing that all will be as it is meant to be, that you are exactly where you are supposed to be, and everything is unfolding in divine right timing. At least that's how I think of it. Feel free to put that in whatever phrase suits your reality. When you find yourself connected to that place, or if you're struggling to connect to it, choosing a spot where you want it to live and infusing that area with that confidence, that peace of mind, that trust in the flow of everything. And I'd like you to just take the thumb and index finger of your dominant hand and just gently rub them together as if you were rubbing a penny between your fingertips. And as you do, let it be as if you're spinning a thread that connects that feeling of confidence and peace and flow deep within you to this simple action of rubbing your fingertips together. Let that be an anchor for that confidence and calm focus, peace of mind. And you can stop rubbing your fingers together. And just letting your attention begin to shift now, shifting it to the rhythm of your breath again. Breathing in, breathing out. And perhaps letting your attention shift to your intention for being here today, to the goals or outcomes you desire from showing up to do this work. And as you think about that, rub your thumb and index finger together again and notice that those intentions and goals and outcomes now become infused with that confidence, and trust that they will find fulfillment in your process. And again, taking your attention back to the breath. And as you notice the breath, beginning to notice your body more again, noticing the edges of your body, noticing the places where your body makes contact with whatever you might be sitting, leaning, or lying upon. And beginning to bring your attention back out into the room, back to your screen. And as you continue to draw your attention outward again, you might wish to take a moment or two to jot down on the Google Doc or on your paper notes your intention for today and whatever outcome or goal you might be seeking. And perhaps any other notes about that experience, if there was something that really stood out that you want to make sure to remember. I'll give you a moment to do that. And if you feel moved or motivated, you're welcome to share your intentions or outcomes in the chat. We will do some voice sharing later. Right now, I just want to make sure we get into our information for the day. Joanna just wrote, ha ha, I'm such a learner. I was already noticing hypnosis languaging. And that was even half-assed on the fly hypnosis languaging. One of the things I think is really important to know is that you absolutely don't have to do anything perfectly for it to be effective. It is much more effective to be present with your own trance state and allow that to guide your pacing and your words and the experience than to try to say exactly the right thing. So if you know the points you want to hit, it's a good starting place. So speaking of doing things perfectly and maybe setting some boundaries, from an ethical perspective, I do need to mention this course is not a hypnosis certification training. It is not an NLP practitioner training. You will not come out the end of the three classes certified for anything that you weren't already certified to do. You cannot come out of these 3 days and hang a shingle as a hypnotist or an NLP practitioner if that wasn't already part of what you were doing. Now that said, if you wish to seek that training out, if something about these classes inspires you, there are some fine trainings that I can recommend and some resources for, they're actually a bunch of really well-developed self-study resources now for NLP. And I think that lends itself very well. And I really just have one hypnosis certification training course that I recommend anymore because it's my mentor. And once I learned his methods, I never went back to doing it any other way because it was so impactful. So if you want information on that, feel free to message me. My email address is on the handout. And of course, you can always reach me through Joanna if you lose that. I'm making more work for you, Joanna. Let's see. So not a certification course, but what it is an opportunity to benefit from my experience as a practitioner of these modalities and as somebody who has trained dozens of people to be professional hypnotists over the years. I don't teach that anymore. It's just not the vibe that I've been in. But I've taught it a lot. So a lot of what you're going to hear are snippets from those things that have been pulled together over the years. And the hypnosis languaging almost had you sound asleep. So one of the things I don't have in today's class is a big section on myth busting. And that's because that can be a whole thing unto itself. That said, we may, when we get into Q&A time, take a little bit of time to say, what myths have you heard, or what things have you heard about hypnosis that you now think might be myths or misperceptions, just so we can clear them up. But I think the process of going through what hypnosis is often then informs us as to what it isn't, and where we've been given a fictitious view of something for the sake of entertainment in a movie or a TV show, or just for the convenience of a maybe less scrupulous practitioner who thought it was advantageous to let you think they had a control over you that they didn't. That really fries my cheese. Where does that phrase even come from? Anyway, I'm kind of irreverent, ranging to inappropriate at times. So if I range too far to inappropriate, feel free to flag me. So we did that. Cool. Ticking the boxes. So I do want to have some voice sharing to hear a little bit more about why you're here, what you want to gain. You know what? Screw that. We don't need those questions there. I need different questions from you. And yep, right, that's the next page. So before we get to the first piece, could a few people just share what it is that you're hoping for, just so I know if we're shaping it the way you want it? And just unmute yourself. I'm not going to worry about hands raised.
I'm just really curious about, I'm excited to learn from you. I know how amazing you are at what you do. I've heard about NLP and I love words. And so like anything that I kind of see it as like learning a new skill, but also like honing the ones that we already know. And I love that interplay and kind of like that Venn diagram. I'm curious about like what's new and what's like kind of like a nuance or detail.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I think probably there's gonna be a lot less new than you might think and a lot more nuance or detail that deepens and expands, if that makes sense. So anybody else have something they want to share?
Yeah, I very much like Imbal. I'm very interested in feeling grounded even more in the words that I might choose and the sequence of words that I might choose, and feeling that not only for how that can impact the way that I'm using the tools that we're learning with Joanna in client session, but also inform the way that I then maybe make resources that wouldn't be for when I was there live with someone. So make sure that when I don't have that access of being one-on-one face-to-face or reading more of their energy in the moment, that I'm being very thoughtful about the sequencing and the words I'm using to help support the state even more. Mm-hmm. And then the other part I'm really fascinated and interested in knowing more is about like brain states and yeah, what you have to say. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And I think you raise a really important point that the dynamics do change a little bit when we are able to be in person with somebody versus maybe on Zoom or on the phone, and the amount that we are or are not able to pick up on some of the subtle nonverbal cues from them does shift some of the choices that we make. So if we know how we want to shape the experience and we have a better sense of how to use the language to do that, it also allows us to hear different things in the language they're using that cues us about where they are in their process. So that's more in the next week's class. But yeah, awesome. Anybody else, anything to share? Is that kind of like everybody's here for that?
I have one more question to ask. That. Will you, when we get into more of the next week's 2 weeks classes, will you be speaking to, is this mostly for leading one-on-one, or will it also be some of the things be applicable for lead, like you just led us through a grounding, right, in a group environment.
So that's a really good question. And I hadn't really thought about that aspect of it. I usually think of sacred depths as being, you know, primarily one-on-one techniques. And there are things that hold true across no matter how many people. And then there are some things that do shift. So if you can do me a favor, shoot me a message with that question in the next week, and whether I'm able to wrap that into what we do next week or whether I'm able to add that into what we do in the third class. But then the other option is if that's something that you are in particular interested in and we can't make it part of the scope of this, when we get to the third class, I will be talking to you, of course, about how you can work with me more and get more support. Part of why I'm not talking about that today is that, to be perfectly frank, I'm waiting for a surgery date, and there's a lot of things I can't definitively schedule till I have that, which I should have by the end of the third class. So, you know, life happens, right? But yeah, you use some of the same techniques, but some different techniques for individuals versus groups. That's the short answer to your question. Does that help? Okay. So I think one of the best ways to learn is experientially, right? So who would like to play a very short game with me? Is everybody in? Vince said yes, no, maybe. If you don't want to, you can sit it out, absolutely fine. So if you would like to play, what I would like you to do is look at me and take your right hand and bring it up next to your face like this so that I can see it on screen. So you can, if you've got selfie on, so you can see it on screen. Awesome. And then like you do, spread your fingers wide and then make a circle with your thumb and your index finger. Take a look at your circle. Take a look back at me. Put your circle on your chin. That's your chin. Ha ha, gotcha. This is one of my favorite things. So we're gonna unpack exactly what that was. You can all now say you have been hypnotized by one of the best. That was hypnosis, plain and simple. Hypnosis is a glorified game of Simon Says, fundamentally. It is simply a matter of the complexity or depth of the tools that we use the hypnotic state to implement that lets us kind of expand our results, right? So that was not a therapeutic application of hypnosis, right? That was for fun. I actually learned that in a class about stage hypnosis. I never to stage hypnosis, but I love that illustration because it lets us unpack the nature of trance in a really simple way. Now, did anybody feel in that little Simon Says type game like you were in deep trance? Probably not, right? We don't actually know if you were in deep trance or light trance, but we know that you were in trance because of the results that we got. So, how many of you had a huh moment when I said, put your circle on your chin and your circle's on your cheek? And some part, I saw Alyssa go, wait, wait a minute, right? So some of us have this like, huh? I need to do the other thing. Others of us just kind of go, something isn't right. And still yet others of us don't even notice that a different word was said, right? Some of that has to do with what in NLP we would call your primary representational set, the sensory input that's your like number one. So we'll get to that. We're going to unpack all these things piece by piece. Man, I need different glasses again. So how many of you had a huh moment before the circle even got to your cheek, but it still got to your cheek? Okay, so nobody. How many of you had a huh moment after the circle got to your cheek? And then you either made movement to move it or you thought about moving it, but you didn't because you didn't want to be wrong. That's a thing too, right? And how many of you didn't even have the huh moment until it was pointed out, right? Okay, so let's do a quick definition. This is a basic functional definition of hypnosis. Hypnosis equals trance plus suggestibility. That's it. Hypnosis equals trance plus suggestibility. Okay, so obviously we need to define some of these terms further because we make some assumptions that we know what trance is. And some of the assumptions we make about what trance is are based in how we have experienced it when we've been guided through it. Trance, simply defined, is a heightened state of focused concentration. Nobody felt all tranced out in that, right? But you were in trance. You had a heightened state of focused concentration. And what makes it hypnotic trance, get all the words out with the right syllables, is that you add the component of suggestibility. Suggestibility, simply put, is a willingness to accept suggestion, or said another way, to follow instructions, either given to you by someone else or given to you by your own self. If the suggestions are being given to you by yourself, if you are giving yourself suggestions, then that's self-hypnosis. That's all. What's self-hypnosis? It's when you're the one giving yourself the suggestions. That's it. Or engaging with a program that you're choosing to be hypnotized by. But really, that's just kind of remote or recorded hypnosis if it's a recording. There's nuances. We're not worrying about those right now. So trance is a heightened state.
And I have a question. Can I?
Please.
So the trance state, right? We talked about it, that we're engaging clients in the trance state when we're doing sacred depths work. But it strikes me then that trance states can happen in any number of things, right? Like when you're in meditation, you might be in a trance state. When, I don't know, there are magical rituals that one might do that you're actually in a trance state, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And there are many other naturally occurring moments of trance states. So you are... three paragraphs down my page. It's awesome. Thank you for that lead in. I'll pay your $20 later. Rhythm, repetition, and monotony all have the potential to induce natural trance. Heightened state of focused concentration doesn't feel like anything unless we are focusing the concentration on something that will make us feel something. So inducing trance by focusing on the breath. You focus on the sensation of the breath, that creates certain changes in the body and certain shifts in the nervous system. And so we begin to associate trance with states of relaxation or peace or calm. But those are byproducts of what we are focusing our attention upon in the trance state. You can be in a deep trance state in a ritual and be in a highly excited, not at all relaxed state of body and mind, but still be in deep, deep trance. So things that give us that rhythm, repetition, and monotony. Highway hypnosis, road trance, yep, totally a thing. We go into trance watching television. We go into trance sometimes if I'm not a runner, but I certainly have enough friends who are to know trance is not uncommon with running or walking or other repetitive physical activity. I go into trance state if I'm chopping a lot of onions. It's rhythmic, repetitious, and monotonous. And hypnotic states and different depths of trance states vary, but we're in and out of them dozens, if not hundreds of times a day as naturally occurring states that can last just for a few moments or for much longer, depending on how we got there and whether we know we're there and want to stay there. So does that make sense? Okay. So also notable in terms of myths I do want to make sure to bust up about trance states is that you as a human being have free will. Hypnosis cannot negate your free will. No one can take away your free will or take control over your free will or make you do something through the application of hypnosis that you do not want to do, including the positive change that you have asked that person to help you with. Been there, done that. You can say, I want this change. But if you're scared to make the change or there's some other obstacle or resistance to it, some other unaddressed fear, you 100% have the power to reject every useful suggestion somebody gives you. So that's a good thing to know. And if you've ever seen somebody clucking like a chicken in a stage hypnosis show or doing something else silly, they ended up on that stage because on some level they knew that getting up on that stage might mean they could become part of the entertainment. They might have a subconscious desire to be the center of attention that they would not claim in another setting. There's so many reasons why people end up on the stage in a stage hypnosis show, and nobody ends up on that stage if they are not willing at some level to be part of the show, to be part of the entertainment. So any questions about free will? Good. Okay. So the game we just played, how does this all apply? First, I got your consent to play a game, which implies I will give instructions and you agree you will follow them. And you probably want to win the game. So if you agree to play a game and you want to win the game, you're probably going to pay attention. You're going to focus and concentrate more than you would ordinarily. I just saw in the chat, Lissa's seen people come out of it on stage when the suggestion wasn't what they liked. Absolutely. Absolutely. The mind just goes, nope, and nopes you right out of trance, and that's that. And that is fairly common. So there's nothing wrong with it. It's what it is. So we played a game. You wanted to win. So you engaged in a heightened state of focused concentration so you could catch the instructions that I was giving you. The suggestions, if you will. Therefore, it was a hypnotic trance. Simple. It's so simple. That piece about consent, though, and being clear that you're going to give somebody instructions, either for a benign or entertaining purpose, or for a purpose that is aligned with a goal that they have, it's one of those really important pre-framing pieces. You know, now, you know, if we're doing a befriend your fear or a, you know, a shadow techniques or any of the other go inside and look around kind of techniques, it helps if we say, I'd like to do a technique with you that will help you get greater insight into this pattern and access new solutions. Would you like to do that with me now? If you give them the opportunity to say yes, before you even say, take a deep breath and close your eyes, you've already stacked it in your favor. You've already potentiated success because they've given consent in a way that engages them in the process. Little things, right? Yep, always get consent beforehand, not just because it helps someone to go deeper and because it's trauma informed. Yeah, and it makes your techniques more effective. When we don't get consent and somebody's in distress about something and you just say, and I'm saying this because I have made this mistake. Days when I'm in a hurry or not as connected as I had wanted to be, okay, yep, I get it. I know exactly what to do. Okay, take a deep breath and close your eyes. And that was not a person who responded well to a directive approach. It's an uphill battle the whole way. So those little things are some of the things that make a big difference. But if you know why they potentiate success, it also makes it easier to remember to do them because we want to succeed too. Right? So we established consent, we established suggestibility. And then, so this is part of the, we'll get to this more later, but there is a process of stacking the suggestions. So I gave you a brief sequence of verbal and visual instructions in the beginning. And because it was in the context of a game, you were interested in paying attention to that. And there was a way of doing that. So we started with, if you'd like to play this game, then go ahead and put your hand up next to your face like this, you know? So soft, not authoritative, more permissive, right? But then we started the game. Okay, now, and if you want to go through the steps again, just to feel it in your body, you can, you don't have to, you know, spread your fingers wide, right? So that's a direct suggestion and directive, authoritative. Make a circle with your thumb and your index finger, right? Now, here comes the fun part. Look at your circle. You looked. Look back at me. You looked. verbally, I gave you, put your circle on your chin. Visually, so your mind is now expecting another look command, I gave you, put your circle on your cheek. So I stacked the deck in my favor that you were going to put that circle on your cheek because it was a visually based sequencing of suggestions. So that's one of those little things that if you want to lead somebody to something, but you know that if you tell them to just go there right off the bat, they might resist because there's fear or uncertainty. You can give them suggestions that are in the vein of, in the same format of the one that you really would like to get them to, so that by the time you get to that third statement or fourth statement, they're in a rhythm of receiving and accepting. Now that's a big overview, but you see how these things, these little things just start to knit together into a very different kind of fabric to hold up the whole practice.
So what's an example? Is there an example like if you were like wanting to like lead a client or a child even, or like how you would use it like IRL?
Actually, I was thinking, you know, like when, you know, with Joanna has us, like has, you know, works with people to have them assume, you know, being that 8-year-old child who's going to do the thing that they really wanted to do in a certain situation, right? Like she, oh, I had this thought, but let's see what I do with that. But like, instead of just saying, okay, you're going to be the 8-year-old child who's going to do whatever, what do you think you want to do? Right. She really, the point of that is just to put you in a, put that young one in a position where they can assert as much power as possible, right? And so she has you really connected with your body and her, like right there's a whole set of both visual like really and verbal connections so that you are fully in your power. So then when she says, okay, and now when you get to this point in the story, you can do whatever you want. What's the next step that you want to take?
Yeah. So I'm thinking about and we'll go into more depth in this in subsequent classes. But for example, in my hypnosis work with people, I'm just blanking on a Sacred Depths direct example for some reason, but we'll do work, but I mean, there's a lot of overlap. We'll do work with healing and integrating the inner child or the young one that you once were, you know, so we might say to somebody, you know, I'd like you to consider the Nancy Prentice, is everybody here identify a woman or do we have non-binary or anyone who uses they them pronouns? I just want to be respectful if anybody needs me to alter language today, this afternoon, still sign it. So I'm going to use feminine pronouns mostly because I'm also tracking it in my own head. So, you know, imagine being with that little one, that little girl that you once were, maybe before the age of 6 or 7 or 8, the little one that's so young that all she knows in her life is safety and security and the expectation to be loved. And imagine now that you can be with that little one, that little girl that you once were. You know, and, you know, be with her and become aware of her. Is she lovable? Well, of course she's lovable. Tell me what's lovable about her. Well, you know, she's adorable and she's so innocent and you know, she's full of potential. And that's right. And, you know, is there anything wrong with her at all? Well, no, she's fine just the way she is. Exactly. And if someone were to try to make you think otherwise, if someone were to try to make you think that there was something wrong with that child or that she was somehow not lovable, well, you would know and recognize right away that they were simply mistaken, wouldn't you? Well, yeah, that's right. Because she's always lovable, no matter what. she is exactly who she is meant to be, and all of the potential for all of the things that she will do and say and be and have in her life is already inside of her, just like the potential for the oak tree is already inside of the acorn. Isn't that right? And then all of a sudden the client's like, well, yeah, right? But if you had started by just saying to that client, hey, by the way, I just want you to know you are lovable just the way you are, and there's nothing wrong with you, and anybody who thinks so is just full of shit. You just sort of go, well, but no, wait, I screwed this thing up, and I procrastinated that thing, and I dropped that, and I broke that. Like, you fight back with the reasons. But if you stack the gentler suggestions that are easier to accept, then you can get to the more direct, fundamental root things that you really want to anchor in. Does that answer your questions? Michelle, is that, yeah, okay, cool. All right, so we'll do that. Okay, so now, any questions before we go into this functional model of the mind? That's kind of the nitty gritty about how stuff's put together. Okay, so model of the mind. There's a big difference between brain science and a functional model of the mind. There's so much that we don't know yet about brain science and so many wonderful things that we're learning, and it's changing all the time. And what I find most helpful is to have a functional model of the mind that looks at the way we use and think about our mind more than what the brain anatomy or neurotransmitters or neural network programming kind of turns out to be. That's all really good, important stuff and fun to learn about. Kind of muddies the waters a little. So what is this conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind stuff anyway? So some of us have never given any thought to these different levels of consciousness or these different areas or levels of the mind. So I want to make sure that we get a clear enough understanding of what each one does, because when we try to use the rules for the conscious mind, when we're working with the subconscious mind, it makes us less effective, and vice versa. So a lot of this functional model of the mind comes from the work of Cal Banyan. He's one of my primary mentors, and certainly you can find out more about his work if you want. So I just want to give credit where credit is due here. So one of my favorite analogies for this is computers. I'm hoping that since we're all on Zoom, that nobody is so much a Luddite that there's not even a rudimentary understanding of how the computer works. If, however, you're like, nope, totally lost, flag me. I'll make sure that we get an alternate model in here for you at some point. So here you are, you're a human being. You are a wetware computer system. You have a body. That's the case for the hardware. It allows the hardware to turn on the hard drive, the basic operating system. It's what allows the various systems to operate at the most fundamental level. It lets you breathe. It lets your heart beat. It lets your immune system function. It lets your digestive system function. None of this is related to things like conscious thought. So that's analogous to the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is the part of your wetware computing system that interfaces with the autonomic nervous system so that your entire existence is not being taken up with remembering to breathe and remembering to make your heart beat. Your unconscious mind does all that work for you. Now, this is a model of the mind relevant to hypnosis. NLP uses a slightly different delineation, which is both simpler and more complicated. So I'm going to do that one after. So whether you are interfacing with the world outside of you or not, the unconscious mind is still chugging along, making sure the meat suit works. Yeah? Okay. We typically don't have conscious control over things that are in the purview of the unconscious mind. Now, the big exception to that is we can take conscious control of the rhythm and rate of our breathing, But have you ever noticed you can really only do that for so long, and then you get distracted, and then your nervous system just takes it over when you're not paying attention and just regulates the rhythm? I mean, because that's, you're putting something on manual that's meant to be on automatic. Now, there is evidence of being able to have impact on body systems, but it's typically not direct control. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that. So how do we get a computer to go from just being a thing that sits there and hums at us to being something that we can use, right? What do we install on a computer to make it useful beyond just sitting there with the operating system? Throw out a word. Apps, right? Software, right? So the apps and the software allow us to do things with computers like create documents and spreadsheets and slide decks and photo collages and videos. And those apps allow us to take information from the world outside of the computer, collect it, organize it, redistribute it, use it in new ways, and organize it all on the hard drive. That's analogous to our subconscious mind. Pausing for effect there. The subconscious mind stores all of the sensory information, inner and outer, that we have experienced and accumulated from the moment that our hardware came online. We may not be aware of having access to all of it, but we take the case that the subconscious database is more or less unlimited. Kind of cool. So our blueprint for our whole lives is in there. Our blueprint for how we take in information, process it, sort it, organize it, use it, spit it back out again, as well as whatever meaning we give to it as it's going through that process. So there's an important function between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. So we talked about the unconscious, subconscious. We'll talk about the conscious mind in a minute, but we call the critical factor. And the critical factor is this gateway. It's this comparing function. So when we're out in the world interacting with our conscious mind intentionally out here, and we're taking in information and data, for the subconscious mind to know what to do with it, it goes, okay, is this new or is it familiar? Do I put it where I already have a file folder, or do I need to make a whole new folder for this? Right? Is this a new enough experience that my subconscious is going, whoa, wait a minute, new stuff? Or is it just old hat? And it's like, nah, file, file, file. That critical factor comes in especially handy in our understanding of hypnosis. Here's the interesting thing about that critical factor and the subconscious mind. Our critical factor doesn't fully come online, doesn't fully develop until about the age of 7. So how do we sort, organize, compare information as it's coming in when we're younger than 7? Anybody want to take a crack at hollering out how we do that? It's okay to be wrong. I guess
we rely on other people.
Yeah. Yeah. We borrow the critical factor of typically the adults or caregivers around us. We observe them and how they respond, how they react, what they seem to do with the information, and our little minds try to extrapolate how to do that inside. So if they're crappy at it, we get that template. So that's going to come into more play later. But this is why so many of the things, when you're working with really deeply ingrained, unhelpful patterns, seem to go back to a time before we were 6 or 7 or 8, because it goes back to a time before we knew how to filter out the stuff that didn't serve us. So this comparing mechanism checks the data. Now, typically, if something's really a mismatch, it doesn't get through. If somebody really challenges a core belief, that comparing function, that critical factor, goes, oh, no. I am not accepting that belief about myself from you. I am not accepting that belief about the world in this circumstance, or from this news outlet, or from this book, or this book, right? We've all had those experiences of feeling that inner process of something that is not aligned getting rejected, right? So it's always working. Familiar things get through much more easily. It might need additional evaluation sometimes, but you get the general gist of it, right? So if the filtering mechanism that the people around us when we're young, if their filtering mechanisms are glitchy, sometimes we spend a good bit of our adult lives undoing what we inherited. The good news is we can. We absolutely can. Blueprints can be changed. So this filtering mechanism, we're mostly not consciously aware of it, right? It's mostly happening under the surface, under our conscious awareness, under the conscious awareness in the subconscious mind. Fair enough? Okay. So we don't typically have regular access to this. It's a background process, unless we employ trance. Now, does your computer make files all by itself and populate those files with information? I mean, if you're some kind of like AI tech wizard, maybe, but generally speaking, no. Right? We tend to go with average person experience here. So how do those computer files get made, edited, printed, shared, created, deleted, moved? Because we make a decision to do it. We make a decision to put that information together. The computer interacts with us. We are the operator in the outside world who's making the observations and taking the actions. That's our conscious mind. You ask someone for directions, they tell you, you hear it, and then your conscious mind transfers that info via the critical factor to the subconscious mind for processing and storage. So if the directions are, oh yeah, that's right, I remember where that is now, it becomes a subconscious process and your feet just get you where you need to go. If it's really unfamiliar, then your experience might be more like, okay, I've got to think about it. I've got to walk two blocks. And then they said, make a right at the red awning and then go a half a block and look for this alley or, you know, whatever it is. So the more that we have to really pay attention in the moment, the more engaged the conscious mind is in the process. And it's the conscious mind's job to engage in critical thinking, to engage in analysis. It's a single point of focus. Conscious mind is where our willpower resides. So here's the problem with that. Your conscious mind, so if your subconscious mind has unlimited data storage capacity, your conscious mind's storage capacity is 7 to 9 bits. That's not even a full phone number. Okay. So you decide you want to make a change through conscious rote repetition and it feels really hard. That's why, right? You're trying to make a major life change with less than the computing power of your car. But when you use trance to access the blueprint in the subconscious mind, shift the patterns that give the automatic responses, that give the conscious mind the background for what it's doing, you can begin to make changes faster from a place of insight instead of repetition. And this is what makes trance work so much fun, because we get to do that. We get to fast track change. How cool is that? So I went through that. Okay. Thought of another way, your subconscious mind holds the blueprint for the house that is you. And if you keep noticing the corner keeps crumbling off and you don't know why, you can keep putting new bricks in there over and over and over again until the next time it crumbles. Or you can look at the blueprint and see if maybe something got drawn incorrectly on the blueprint, or compare and see if the bricks that got put in place were put in correctly according to the blueprint, or whether there was a translation error. Or you can just sometimes lift the whole house off the foundation and look for the spot in the foundation that got a little bit wonky, fix that, put the house back in place, and the bricks just restack themselves. That's when it's really super fun, when you get to watch the subconscious process just unfold into a whole new reality. Those are glorious moments. Am I making sense? Yes, we're good. Okay. So far,
actually,
so good.
I think there are lots of methodologies that are trying to do this. They're trying to unhack the subconscious, because we know yes. that the conscious mind is like it's tapped pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That you can only consciously focus on something for so long before things kind of drop out. So these are basic premises about these, each of these areas. And so when we think about how we talk with different parts of the mind, would you talk to a 5-year-old child the same way that you would talk to a 50-year-old college professor? Absolutely not, right? Would you expect them to talk to you in the same way, to use the same words, the same patterns, have the same kinds of focus? Nope. So when we look at the function of these different parts of the mind, conscious mind solves problems in the moment. Critical analytical thought, change occurs primarily through rote repetition. It can occur through insight with the partnership of the subconscious mind, and critical thinking is always going to be part of the process for conscious mind change. The conscious mind likes everything to be logical, to be linear, to be rational and analytical and all line up in neat little boxes. When's the last time your life lined up in neat little boxes? Mine hasn't for a while, right? So this is why when we're trying to get at what's underneath something, the things that are in the background driving behaviors that we may not be consciously aware of, it takes a lot longer and it's a lot more effortful to try to do that through conscious mind intervention. So let's see, is there anything else that's here? Nah, I'll let that go. So subconscious mind, its function is to store sensory information from your surrounding environment, as well as internal sensory input and states. Change can also occur through repetition, slowly in the subconscious. But the more fun part is to be able to do it quickly through insight. The subconscious mind, again, it's our long-term memory. So conscious mind is short-term memory. Subconscious mind is long-term memory storage. Large capacity database. It's organized with a network of associations that are intensified the more emotional bonds there are in those associations. It's where we store our beliefs. It's where we store our habits. It's where we store our patterns for personality. Emotions are generated and held in the subconscious mind and then translated into feelings by the unconscious mind in the body. So if the emotion is anger, but the physical experience of it is increased heart rate, the emotion is anger, the feeling is the kinesthetic experience of it. And that kinesthetic experience, that body experience of it, that is the department of the unconscious mind. So that's how subconscious and unconscious can do some work together. And so there's a feedback loop there too, because we can attend to things our bodies are doing to notice how the unconscious mind is translating something and then use our access to the subconscious mind to shift the pattern so that it translates differently. So that instead of going into, you know, fight, flight, fawn, or freeze, we get to choose to go into a more functional stress response of, say, tend and befriend. Easier on the body.
And can I just interject there for a sec? For everybody listening, if you're noticing everything that Anne is talking about right now is exactly what we do in the Choose Your Own Shadow Journey technique, like step by step by step. I can't explain why because I have COVID, but hopefully, Anne, I think it'd be worthwhile if you take a minute to overlay what you're talking on to that technique, because it correlates exactly.
Can I do that next time?
Yes.
Because that's actually part of the new, you know, tweaking the nuanced skills and things. And I want to make sure that we have the whole model of the mind picture here. So, but that's the key, though, in some ways, and I think it's not what you're getting at all, but that when you're working with the subconscious mind is emotional. The subconscious mind is non-linear. The subconscious mind is an interconnected web of associations. So it's the ranging conversation of an excited five-year-old, not the well-organized argument of the college professor. So honestly, that's one of the easiest hacks. If you're thinking about how to interact with somebody's subconscious mind, think of it like you're talking with a five-year-old who might come up with something weird, and your response to the five-year-old coming up with something weird is going to be to validate it. You're like, yeah, you know, I get it. You really love purple pandas. Tell me all about that. Because you actually really want to know. Because when it's in a choose your own shadow or befriend your fear process, you want to know more about that. So the language of the conscious mind is the language of analysis. The only word I'm going to tell you to avoid when you're doing trance work, if you possibly can, is why. Why? When you ask somebody in deep trance, why do you think that is? You have just full bore engaged the critical analytical process of the conscious mind and have a very good chance of just pulling them right up out of 80% of their access to the deep trance stuff and into the analytical process of thinking and trying to solve the problem with their conscious mind, which if they'd been able to solve the problem with their conscious mind before that day, they wouldn't be working with you on it then. So finding other ways to ask why. So for example, instead of why do you think you do that? Things like what, so this is in Befriend Your Fear and in the shadow work, what purpose does that serve? So that's a why question. But what's happening is the subconscious mind is searching the library for the definition of purpose for that thing instead of analyzing and abstracting into why and because. That makes sense? It's a little thing, makes a huge difference. Or another way of asking that is, how does doing X benefit you? You know, if the purpose is to keep you safe, how does doing that keep you safe? Tell me more about that. Eliciting the expanded response. So also, subconscious mind is highly experiential. It stores sensory data. So the more senses that you can engage when you're working in trance, the better. Whether they're in something that they experienced previously, tell me more about what you're feeling in your body. Tell me more about what you're hearing. Tell me more about... there's five senses and they're all here and I just blanked, but you get what I'm talking about. So those kinds of skills are the things we're going to go into more detail on in our next class. So how, quick overview of how hypnosis and NLP help you embrace working in trance, because I know we're running out of time. Johanna was worried when I was like, I'm only going to prepare this much content. She's like, well, people can sometimes be quiet, maybe prepare more. And like, I'm a chatterbox. There's never a problem with filling the space. So we know what hypnosis is now, trance plus suggestibility. Another definition of that is the bypass of the critical factor, which we've talked about, and the establishment of acceptable selective thinking. In other words, getting around that critical factor of comparison by entering a trance state and thinking the thoughts that we want to be thinking, directing the thoughts in the direction we want to be moving on purpose instead of just letting the default flow. Simple as that. If you have myths or misperceptions about hypnosis, shoot me a line. And we'll make sure that we'll get them all addressed as we go along. So NLP. NLP is not hypnosis, although I do know practitioners who say NLP is basically hypnosis done with your eyes open in a conversation where nobody bothers to tell you that they're gonna have you work in trance, because you don't have to have your eyes closed to be in trance. So whereas hypnosis requires consent, there are neurolinguistic programming techniques that can bypass consent and create new programming without your conscious awareness. It is actually fairly manipulative, which is why it gets used in sales trainings. I don't like it. I mean, I don't like that it's manipulative. It's great that it's manipulative. It's helpful. I just don't think it's ethical to use it that way. That's what I mean to say. The person who trained me in NLP said, you know, if you want people to have lasting change in their lives and feel good, you know, use hypnosis for sure. If you want to fix something really quickly without having to have a big conversation about it, use NLP. If you want to start a cult, NLP is the way to go. That was the descriptor. So you don't have to have formal induction of trance in order to use NLP techniques. So they can be good fast tracks around resistance if you're needing to kind of make a bridge to be able to get to the trance work, or if somebody just needs a quick little band-aid to feel better so that they can get on to the next thing. NLP has a lot more of these quick little things that you can apply. And so I'll give you a couple of resources for that and a couple of things that you can practice with that next time. My experience with using NLP and hypnosis separately and together is that any technique that is effective in NLP without formal induction of trance is even more effective when you're doing it on purpose in hypnosis. The deeper you are in your trance state, the lower the threshold of suggestibility, the more of those suggestions get in, the more of the work gets done more easily. Why wouldn't you? So I'm biased, but I've always leaned more heavily on the hypnosis side. But NLP being a set of models that allow people to create cognitive change, behavioral change, and access and build more resourceful states for their goals. So much of what we do in the coaching world has its roots in NLP, whether we know it or not, even just the basic pillars of NLP. So rapport, meeting people where they are, listening for where they're coming from and speaking their language back to them, right? That's an NLP thing. We just do that as a matter of course, because it's part of being good coaches. It's part of being good transformational practitioners. And it also makes our hypnosis more effective. Sorry, my eyeballs lost their space. There it is. Sensory awareness, right? The more grounded we are in what our client is experiencing in their senses, the more we can be present with them in it, the more we can leverage those states and help them to anchor their new patterns in their, not only in their minds, but also in their bodies. The more we can help them be aware of the feeling component of their emotions, the more progress they make. You hear the four levels of learning seeping in here? So keep losing that same spot. There it is. Outcome, right? You can't go somewhere if you don't know where you want to go, right? So being clear about what the goal is and working towards that goal in our process, in our language, that's a pillar of neurolinguistic programming. And behavioral flexibility, knowing that change is possible and knowing that you might have to choose a different behavior in order to generate a different outcome. That whole concept of change happens when we step outside our comfort zone. Pillar of NLP. So you see how this all dovetails together in the background without you even knowing that it was there? It's woven through our entire industry to the point where most people don't even know that piece came from here, this piece came from there. And I don't think you can even separate them anymore. And so, as noted previously, I prefer to combine them. I think there's a lot of advantages in combining modalities because you get to leverage the benefits of one using the benefits of the other. Why not? Now, I said the model of the mind is a little different than NLP. The thing that's different is that when you're reading NLP materials, they only really talk about the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. And so all of the functions of the subconscious and the unconscious are lumped together under the definition or under the umbrella of the unconscious mind if you're in an NLP context in that lexicon. Conscious mind still does what conscious mind does. Let's see. And then connecting more deeply. We actually have already talked about this a lot, but I want to quote something from Joanna's syllabus before we wrap, because it really stands out for me. Create and nurture open, loving, vulnerable, trustworthy, connected relationships with your clients. This is the basis of all successful transformation and results. So if we can identify their inner language, if we can be present with them in their inner landscape, if we can attend to what things come to the forefront more for them. So when we talk next time more about NLP stuff, we'll talk about identifying your client's language. Are they visual? Are they auditory? Are they kinesthetic? Is there a blend in how it goes out and how it comes in? And how can you use that language to help the suggestions, to help the instructions land more easily, right? But when we can create that rapport more deeply, we're able to accomplish more together with them. And so if we know how to do that and why it works, it instead of thinking about, okay, I need to do this thing because this is what works and this is what will make it better, when we let this context start to become part of our foundation and we allow ourselves to begin to understand how these puzzle pieces fit together, we stop thinking about, am I saying the right words? Am I phrasing this the right way? And we start being more present with our clients in their worlds. And then, and I bet you, if you've had the experience of when you're able to just be present and not worry about the next words out of your mouth, you get so much farther and the work is so much more rewarding and joyful and fulfilling. Anybody have that experience besides me? I hope. If not, this is going to be your access to taking it to that level, to not worrying about the nitty gritty and getting yourself into a flow. I give you a lot less Q&A time than I planned. I just want to honor that it is 2 minutes after four.
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to jump in.
Yeah.
Because I do want to honor the time. Mm-hmm. If everybody can hang on for like 2 more minutes. Well, first, I just want to say something to piggyback on the last thing that you said, which may be helpful for everybody. When we do techniques like befriend your fear, choose your own shadow journey, you know, any of that stuff, I always in my mind think about it as like we have the container of the session and the relationship. And then when we go into that process, I'm stepping into an even tighter container with the client. It's like a container within the container. And one of the things I really got from our time together today is that when I'm stepping into that container within the container with the client, I am choosing to step in a way into a trance with them. In Absolutely. Order to be fully present, where I'm leading, I'm still leading the container and holding the container, but that container within the container, I'm really in the trance mm-hmm. with them. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there in case that visual is helpful. Hopefully, Anne, that makes sense in the realm of what you're talking about.
It absolutely does. And I'm glad that you brought that out more specifically. That was actually a piece that I meant to say and missed. So I'm really glad that you brought that in. And then the last piece that I just want to make sure that we kind of put in here is, as we're learning, right, whether it's our clients or whether it's us in our own learning processes, we know that, energy follows energy, right? We get what we expect to a certain extent. We get more of whatever we put our attention and our energy on. And so when we focus on what we do want, we get the opportunity to create that. One important thing about the subconscious mind is it doesn't hear negatives. So, you know, if I say to you, don't think of pink elephants, what just popped right into your head, whether you wanted it to or not, right? A pink elephant, right? And if you have aphantasia, it was the concept of a pink elephant instead of a picture of a pink elephant, right? So, but if I say, okay, well now think of a yellow cat. Okay, what happened to the pink elephant, right? It's replaced. If I say, whatever you do, do not think of pink elephants. Don't do it. Put every example of pink elephants out of your mind. Like, you can't stop. Because what your mind hears is, think of pink elephants. Parentheses, not. So in order to negate it, you have to keep manifesting it. And so as we are in our learning processes, and I know that we do this with the reframing and sacred depths too. If you notice yourself thinking, ah, you know, I wish I didn't do X, take it the extra step of, instead, I would very much like to do Y, or I would like to cultivate this skill, or gee, it seems like this is missing, right? And then we keep seeing the gap, and the gap gets bigger and scarier. Start to think about how can you bridge that for yourself by thinking about what wants to be there in its place. Because you can't manifest the negative of something, or you can only manifest the positive, whether that's a thought or whether that's a reality. So this is a whole thing. You know, if you say to somebody, if they're like, oh, you know, I really want this change, you know, but I'm just not sure, you can't say to them, well, don't be afraid. You just reinforce all of their fear, right? So this is this huge piece of that. It's not a huge piece. It's a tiny little seed that gives rise to this huge body of work of befriend your fear, of choosing your own shadow, of looking at the things that have been in your way, and instead of trying to habitually negate them, finding ways of embracing them and reframing them to get all of the energy moving in the same direction instead of reinforcing the negation and the opposition. And so my invitation to you in this next week is to notice those places where things feel hard, and notice the kinds of things you say to yourself. And if it's rhythmic, repetitious, or monotonous when you say it to yourself, you're putting yourself in trance and enhancing the suggestion while you're at it, right? Don't be negative, don't stress, don't worry, right? No. So even when somebody says to you, relax, and you know, and it's the opposite, and you know, I am relaxed, right? How would I access relaxation? Ask a different question. When you notice there's opposition, how could you reframe the question? How can you reframe the perspective to begin to expand your options or to anchor the positive? So anywhere, speaking of anchoring the positive, as we're closing, just notice the places where your intentions have started to be fulfilled. Maybe some of them are already fulfilled. Maybe there are some still in process. Same thing with goals and outcomes, knowing we still have two classes to go. And notice any places where doubt might have seeped in along the edges for you. And just rub your thumb and your index finger together and let the confidence and the calm sweep through, reminding you it's all unfolding in perfect timing and you are getting exactly what you need when you need it. And you can be calm and at peace with that. And just notice how fast that brings it right through. Cool, right? It's a tiny little NLP anchoring thing. So...
like Anne is casting her NLP spell upon us as we close. I want to honor time. Yes. So,
and that's it. That's the end.
And we'll have more time for Q&A next time. So save your questions, bring them to our next class. And thank you so much.
And do write them down. And notice at the end of the handout that you have, there are some integration questions that are spelled out for you. I would invite you to take a few minutes and fill those out for yourself to help, again, anchor that learning through different pieces of awareness for yourself. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. And I promise next time won't be the same kind of fire hose of words and data.
It was perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.